could hear the Kuftar's screams all the way from the underground prisons of the mansion, many feet below his cramped quarters. The shadows of the branches scraping his window took the shapes of iron combs, pliers, and thumbscrews, and the screech of the wind through the crack of his door was like a drill going through his ears. Still, when he blinked and the moonless night gave way to a gray morning, he wasn't at all surprised by the heavy footsteps coming to the front of his quarters. In a way, it was as if he'd been expecting them all his life. It wasn't the first time the Inquisition had come for one of their own. He had enough time to dress with a clean linen shirt, trousers, belt, and shoes when the pounding against his door began, growing more demanding by the second.
Inquisitor Gallio?
Called a man.
The examiners demand your presence at once.
His tone left little doubt that the meeting was not optional. Gallio's trusted sword waited in its sheath by his bedside. It was clean, maintained, in perfect condition, with a perfectly balanced weight to it. He reached for it and tied it to his belt as the pounding grew louder.
Coming!
Gallio exclaimed. For a brief instant, his gaze wavered between the door and his sword. He drew an inch of pale blue steel. He knew he could take whoever was behind that door. If he really wanted to, he could clear a path all the way to the Griffin stables and be well on his way to Galtia, or wherever, before the examiners even thought of organizing a search party. After all, there was not a single other inquisitor who could bring forth a sun wave in all of Staravos. He even dared fantasize that he could land his griffin near Hoya Forest where, without a doubt, a grim-faced mercenary with black hair would welcome him into the small community growing out of carved rock and survivors like himself. Perhaps Gallio would get a reticent welcome to that place, but eventually people would forgive him. After all, he'd fought and lived among the community's inhabitants for years. Some of them were like little brothers to him. Maybe even Alvitra would come along. She looked up to him. She'd listen, maybe. And then it'd be just like the old times. Kes, Al, and him.
It's too late for that, old fool,
he told himself, chuckling sadly through his clenched jaw. He resheathed his sword and opened the door.
Best to face the music with some dignity, he thought.
The Inquisitor they'd sent for him was little more than a young boy, fresh-faced with pockmarked scars still red in his cheeks. Neither him nor the other two Inquisitors behind the boy could have stopped him, if he'd really wanted to run. Instead, he pushed his hands forward and allowed the kid to cuff him with iron restraints. Each chain link was engraved with tiny runes to stop him from casting spells or using most magical talents.
"What am I accused of?"
Gallio asked as his escort hurried him along the white corridors of the mansion. He kept his head straight and didn't bother looking at the other inquisitors and members of the militant church, but he could hear their whispering as he marched down the mansion.
"Quiet!"
the boy told him. Gallio rolled his eyes. The griffin stables were on the floor below. He could smell the manure, like hot peppers mixed with wet earth. It'd only take a shove and a very brief scuffle. The three men were so close to him that him being in cuffs wouldn't make enough of a difference. Instead, he walked with them until they reached the mahogany doors of the examiner's courtroom. The kid stiffened his back and gave Gallio one last dirty look before knocking on the door and stepping away. Gallio stepped inside the shadowy courtroom, whose windows had been covered by linen drapes. The three examiners sat in their elevated chairs, only their frames visible in the dark. Harmon's broad-shouldered figure was in the middle, with tall and slender Barthony to his right, and plump Hatter to the left. The doors closed behind Gallio, the three inquisitors taking their spots behind him, their hands resting on the pommels of their swords.
"Inquisitor,"
called Barthony's stern voice.
"Do you know why you're here?"
A tiny strip of pale sunlight had evaded the drapes and fallen right over the woman's eyes. She gave no sign of noticing. Her entire focus was on him. Gallio held her gaze and thought, "Screw it."
"Now, Your Eminence, although I suspect you're about to tell me,
Speak to us in that tone again, and I'll have you quartered,
Harmon said with terrible calm.
My apologies.
The Kaftar scum you so kindly helped capture has yielded to the interrogators,
Barthony went on, as if nothing had happened.
We've found that Constantina's low-life elements are guilty of aiding a dungeon lord for more than a year. Since only the Heligian Navy is standing between Dungeon Lord Wraith's escape from Sterevos by sea, we shall take immediate action.
It was as if someone had frozen his chest solid and then run him through with a heated iron. When Gallio spoke, his voice came raspy and distant, barely recognizable as his own.
And you needed me in handcuffs to tell me this?
Harmon rose to his feet, sending his wooden chair flying backward.
You know what you did, traitorous scum!
Tiny flecks of saliva flew out of his mouth. Gallio could have bet his life's savings that the former warrior was about to have him executed. But then came a tiny voice, almost out of nowhere, with only one word.
Allegedly,
said Examiner Hatter, with one hand on his belly and the other flexing his fingers in the unmistakable tell of a magic user preparing to cast a spell, if need arose. Harmon's gaze drilled into Hatter's unflinching face. The fat man smiled kindly, and to Gallio's surprise, Harmon seemed to deflate.
Allegedly. Indeed, Examiner, he said, picking up his chair and sitting back down.
The prisoners implied that Lord Wraith's dungeon is manned by survivors from Barova,
said Barthony.
This contradicts the story you told the militant church upon your return, before being welcomed back into the service.
Her lip curled as if she were gazing at a pile of dung.
Given the time you spent among the Sterevosi while not in direct supervision of the Light, us examiners have agreed there's enough risk that you may have skirted the fine letters of your renewed vows to protect your friends. We shall confirm or deny this theory by sifting through the corpses left in the hero's wake after they deal with Dungeon Lord Wraith. If guilty, you shall be executed. If not, your current status shall be returned to you with our sincere apologies.
She held her hands as if in prayer.
In the meantime, you are off the case, Inquisitor. You are to wait in the prisons while we deal with Undercity's infection.
Hatter rubbed his belly and sighed.
I'm sure you'll hate to miss all the fun, he said sarcastically.
You're dismissed,
said Examiner Harmon, gesturing at the guards to take Gallio away.
Get him out of my sight.
Gallio had dreaded this day would come, and now that he was living in the nightmare, he found himself free from all emotion, as if a huge weight had been lifted off his shoulders. For the first time in so long, he had nothing left to fear, because the worst had already come to pass. As the Inquisitors reached for him and dragged him away, he realized it was as if he could see the scene play out from far away, like a god or a spirit floating above it all, observing. He shook the Inquisitors free and stepped back toward the Examiners.
You know,
he told them, fearless, like a dungeon lord giving his last speech as his dungeon was being raided and his last portal was being collapsed.
This thing you plan to do to Undercity, you realize it'll only legitimize him, don't you?
He could see Harmon's wide-open eyes as the Examiner's fury washed all over him. It didn't faze him.
There's no going back after you do this. He'll see you as monsters, and so will the Sterevosi. Everything they'll do to us they'll believe is justified. Because of this, you'll create the abominable creature the Inquisition fears, Examiners, and it'll stop at nothing until we're broken and expelled from its kingdom.
Someone punched him from the back, right above the kidneys. Gallio bent over and heaved, and an arm locked around his neck. He couldn't breathe and could barely speak as the pressure and blood went to his head. Even then, he forced himself to look up at Harmon and Barthony and Hatter to make sure they understood the gravity of the judgment they were about to pass. How could the powerful be so blind? Perhaps those high chairs stopped them from seeing the wheels of history turn as it came to pass. For the first time in his life, Gallio believed that the mighty and powerful weren't the drivers of history as the bards and themselves made it out to be. No, they were history's tools, marbles smashing against one another from the powerful currents of destiny. It was as if, in one terrible, crystal-clear moment, he could see the gates of all possible futures thrown open. He saw armies of monsters marching against the armies of the militant church. He saw landscapes being littered by dungeons extending all across the horizon, and he saw hordes of mutated horned spiders flowing out of tunnels and drowning young inquisitors. Like the kid choking him right now, under the sheer weight of their numbers. It wasn't magic. He hadn't suddenly bypassed objectivity and unlocked the gift of prophecy. It was just common sense. And these three idiots just didn't have it.
"Don't worry, Inquisitor,"
said Harmon with a hint of mockery as punches began to rain down on Gallio.
"The creature you speak of won't live for very long. No one ever does, against the Light's heroes."
Gallio spat blood on the cold, hard floor and looked up, although this time he only saw blurry movement as the world danced around him. His ears rang, and his throat burned as if on fire.
"Then strike at Lord Wraith with all we've got,"
he managed to say with a raspy mess of a voice that was barely audible.
"Use everything. Call all heroes in Inric's arsenal, all Griffin Riders, all Inquisitors. Summon reinforcements from Galtia. Spare no rune. Maybe then you'll have a chance at stopping what you started before it gains enough momentum."
"Don't tell us how to do our job, Inquisitor,"
said Examiner Barthony, while Hatter looked sadly at Gallio's condition.
"We're not the ones who screwed up. You are. Enjoy your cell."
Someone struck him hard in the head with a sword's pommel, and then it was darkness.
"I really think you should come with us this time,"
Diana told Lisa, looking at her sister through the reflection of the vanity mirror while Diana brushed her hair.
"There's this guy, Anton, who just broke up with his girlfriend. Poor thing. He's a production assistant or something. Anyway, we're gonna hit up the club with the guys tonight. Why miss it? There's nothing wrong with having a bit of fun."
Lisa grimaced. She hadn't slept well for the last week. Her nightmares kept waking her up. Right now, she would have drowned a rabbit if it would satisfy whatever fictional creature it was lurking in her nightmares.
"Diana, that's not my scene,"
she told her sister. Perhaps tonight would be the night.
"I don't know any of those people."
"Well, you'll never know them if you stay here all weekend,"
Diana replied. For an instant, Lisa saw a hint of concern glinting in her sister's eyes.
"Before, it wasn't an issue, you know? You were having fun, playing with your online friends, I guess. But now, I can tell you need a change of pace. I'm worried about you, sis."
Lisa sighed. Perhaps her sister wasn't wrong. Lately, thanks to Ryan and her shithole job, she'd even stopped enjoying her own hobbies. Perhaps that was why she couldn't sleep. It was her mind's way of telling her something was wrong. Maybe she'd need to do something crazy, like taking the offer the black calling card had made her. Why not? People went on adventures all the time. Or perhaps she could do something less likely to end with her in a basement somewhere. Diana had fun and had a job that she enjoyed.
"You know what?"
Lisa started.
"Maybe..."
Her phone buzzed with a notification, followed at once with another one.
"You were saying?"
"Just one second."
The notification was from Ivalis Online, an alert about a world event that had just started, about some Lord Wraith big bad guy who had invaded Undercity. Lisa smiled. Urban warfare wasn't that common in RPGs. The other notification was from Mark. It only said, "Dude."
"Well?"
Diana demanded, now slightly annoyed. Lisa shrugged.
"Sorry, Di. Maybe next time.
She avoided looking at her sister, so she wouldn't have to see the disappointment across Diana's face.
Whatever,
Diana said quietly. She grabbed her coat, a fluffy thing that looked like a deflated, giant rabbit.
Don't wait up for me.
She headed for the door.
I never do,
Lisa shot back with a small grin. She threw on her favorite hoodie and headed toward the fridge to prepare some snacks. It'd be a long night. With any luck, Ryan would even have some rich guy thing to do and wouldn't show up. Perhaps it would be like the old times. Sunlight poured through the bars of the cell, falling straight on Gallio's eyes, forcing him to come to his senses. He grimaced in pain and squinted.
How the hell does Bothany pull it off?
He huddled in a corner and sat, hugging his body, aching all over. He didn't need a mirror to know he was a mess. The metallic taste of blood marred his mouth. His face was swollen and raw, and one of his eyes was closed shut. Even breathing was painful. He probably had a cracked rib.
Assholes,
he mouthed, massaging his sore throat. Slowly, his brain reassembled his scrambled memories of the last few hours. First, the beating. Before that, the examiners. How Hatter had confronted the other two, in a small but obvious way. How Barthony and Harmon had almost had Gallio executed. And finally, what they were about to do to Undercity. He gave the window another glance, wondering if he'd be able to see the slums as the heroes rampaged through.
Some friends you have,
said a low, raspy voice coming from behind Gallio's wall. The Inquisitor jumped in surprise and almost kneed himself in the face.
At least they treat their buddies just as bad as their enemies.
The unseen man cackled softly in a way only someone with a snout could do.
You're the Haganashi we captured,
Gallio said quietly, easing himself back down.
Guilty. Thanks for that, by the way.
The Inquisitor didn't answer. He sat in silence, wallowing in his own misery. Eventually, the Kufdar rapped on the wall.
Hey, you still there?
No, I headed off to Elytra for a quick breakfast,
said Gallio, grinding his teeth and clutching his head.
Bring me some when you come back, will ya?
Again, the Kufdar cackled quietly, immediately followed by rasping wheezes of pain.
Listen, man, I don't know you. I don't even know why you're here. Probably because you're an asshole. But you're the best I can get. Your light friends won't kill one of their own, right? Hear me out on this. They're about to do something terrible. Something from which there's no coming back. You need to stop it. Warn someone. Anyone. Lord Wraith. Perhaps he has the resources to save the city.
Gallio shook his head, then remembered the Kufdar couldn't see him.
I'm afraid it's too late for that. And not a single dungeon lord has been able to hold off the heroes for long. Even if he somehow survived an attack of this magnitude. Undercity's still doomed.
The entire city? Or just the part that your people don't like?
asked the Kufdar.
Yes. I bet you anything that after it's all done and over, Ulysses Heights and the other rich districts will be all that's left standing. Not even a scratch on them.
Perhaps, Gallio said, even if it is true, we're done. The Inquisition won't wait long. They're probably mobilizing the Griffins as we speak, to pave the way for the heroes. The gates are already blocked. There's a procedure. Please, stop talking to me. I cannot do a thing for you.
The Kufdar chuckled one last sad time.
Ah, but you have helped me already. You agreed with me. A part of you knows the Inquisition is not this high and mighty moral guardian it claims to be.
So what?
Gallio said, clutching his head.
Why do you care?
Are you not an Inquisitor?
The Kufdar said. Something in his voice changed, as if the pain had eased up a bit, as if a kind of hungry eagerness had replaced it.
You just broke one of the most important tenets, did you not? Submit to the will of the militant church from the bottom of your heart.
Gallio blinked in surprise and opened up his character sheet, despite knowing perfectly that nothing had changed. The sheet confirmed it. He hadn't fallen from Alita's grace.
It makes you think, doesn't it? That there's something more to your character sheet than what they've told you. That's one mighty sun wave you're able to cast, Inquisitor Gallio.
What do you mean? Gallio asked. Who are you?
No answer came. Outside, footsteps approached.
Kufdar! Gallio called. Explain yourself! Now!
The only response was the hard screech of the rusty door to the jail cell being pushed open. Two people strolled inside, the first one fully suited for combat, Alvedra and Examiner Hatter. Alvedra met Gallio's gaze as the man stumbled to his feet, almost without realizing they were there.
Who are you talking to?
The woman asked, a look of concern in her eyes.
The Kufdar on the next cell,
Gallio said calmly. Alvedra and Examiner Hatter exchanged glances.
You're the only person in these cells,
she said.
The Haga and Nashi both died during the interrogation last night.
Examiner Hatter handed Gallio a vial filled with a red liquid.
Here, drink this,
he told him.
What is it?
Gallio asked, eyeing the liquid with suspicion.
It isn't poisoned, if that's what you're wondering,
Hatter said, taking a small sip himself.
See, it's a healing potion, prepared by Cleric Zeki.
Zeki hates me.
And yet he's a member of the militant church who adheres to the tenets and believes in my orders with all his heart,
Hatter replied.
He made the potion to the best of his ability.
Gallio drank the potion. It tasted of cinnamon, fresh strawberries, and childhood dreams. A pleasant sensation traveled down his throat and spread through his body. He guessed it felt like being hugged by a loving mother. Not that he'd know. The pain lessened, enough for him to breathe easier and stand up without hobbling.
Alita's mercy! They did a number on you,
Alvedra said. She threw Hatter a reproachful glance.
Don't look at me like that,
said the examiner kindly.
I wasn't the one who shook off three guards only so he could mouth off to an examiner.
What are you doing here?
Gallio asked them both. Alvedra placed a gentle hand over the bars.
I heard what happened. Came as soon as I could. Inquisitor Oak gave me some time before we have to leave for the slums. Even if you two have had your differences, we are still a team.
She then nodded at Hatter.
On my way, I found His Eminence. He insisted that he was on our side.
Examiner Hatter nodded curtly. Behind the examiner facade, Gallio saw a short, tired man who ate too many sweets for breakfast and drank too much.
Your loyalty is not in question, Inquisitor. After all, Alita granted you the sun wave during the battle for Barova. To question her judgment is to go against everything we hold sacred.
And yet, here we are,
Gallio said, crossing his arms.
What's really going on, Hatter?
Alvedra winced at Gallio's lack of manners, but the examiner gave it no mind. He only sighed tiredly and shook his head.
Politics, Gallio. Same old. Same as always since the world began to turn.
He looked over his shoulder.
Greater circle of silence,
he whispered, his hands glowing a pale blue as magic spread across the room. He cast a small string of spells to ensure their privacy. When he was done, Gallio suspected that only a demigod would have been able to bypass the protections.
Tell me, Inquisitor, how many others do you know that can use the sun wave?
What kind of question is that?
Gallio asked, frowning.
Many. All members of the Golden Circle. Inquisitor Aaron of the King's Royal Guard. Examiner Harmon, even. And surely many others, out in the field, keeping a low profile.
Hatter waved a finger like a sausage.
Aaron is a boaster. He claims to be able to use it, but hasn't fought in the field in years. I even doubt he has cast a single smite during that time. And I know from personal experience that Harmon, although an extremely powerful warrior and a real war hero, cannot cast a sun wave.
So what? That still leaves hundreds of Inquisitors.
There's only one man alive who has used the power Alita bestows on her champions. He's standing in front of me,
Hatter said gravely.
No one else. Not the Golden Circle. Not the war champions with thousands of experience points. Just a cynical ex-Inquisitor returned to the flock through mostly suspect circumstances. One who's so plagued by doubts about his faith even a blind bat like Barthony can see it. That's it. The militant church has kept it under wraps. Not even King Varen knows. To maintain secrecy, the examiners decided to allow any claims of being able to use the sun wave to stand unchallenged.
A flurry of emotions drowned Gallio's rational mind.
No way. That's impossible.
The sun wave was like a badge of honor for an Inquisitor, the equivalent in an army of the highest award that could be given to any soldier. It was impossible that, in all the militant church, a miscreant like him was the only one worthy of it. Alvedra looked at each of them with wild eyes.
But why treat him like this, then? He's a hero. A real hero, flesh and blood. He should be a symbol for us to rally to. Why would Examiner Harmon almost try to kill him?
Like I said, because of politics,
Hatter responded gravely.
You're the wrong kind of symbol, Gallio. If the truth about you got out, we could send the wrong message to the world. Worse, we could send the wrong message to the Heligian nobility. It's their pockets that sponsor the Sterevosi campaign, after all.
Gallio raised an eyebrow. He was a man of action, a fighter. He understood as much of coin and politics as a spiderling did.
I don't follow, Hatter,
he said. The examiner lifted a finger.
The Sterevosi campaign is a royal mess. The king's coffers are almost dry, and the nobility is tired of paying for what is, in their opinion, a bad business venture. Financing the heroes is already expensive. Having them active in three different countries, Lothia, Heligies, and Sterevos, is the crown's biggest financial drain. At the beginning of the campaign, both the king and the nobles hoped to use the Sterevosi war tax to pay for the heroes we need to protect our lands and to keep Lothia weak. But that has been a massive failure, Inquisitor. The war ravaged Sterevos. They have little left to survive. Their nobility is in shambles, and the royal family has disappeared, taking what little was left of their fortune with them. So, our own nobility wishes to cut ties and leave. Take the heroes out of here and focus on our homeland and our ancient enemy. King Varen, on the other hand, wants to find a way to remove the power the nobility has in his court. He hates to depend on their goodwill and their fortunes, and Sterevos was his big shot. He's not willing to walk away. He's raising taxes and increasing the militant church's presence. This, in turn, angers the Sterevosi and ensures they cannot afford to pay the tax anyway, so they rebel all over the country, which forces King Varen to raise the Inquisition's presence, and the expense grows with each hero running around.
He made a circular motion with his hand.
Do you see where this is going, Inquisitor? What happens when a thriving dungeon lord is added to the mix? What happens when you step in?
I... Gallio rubbed his temple with a pained frown. A dungeon lord corrupting his city would force the militant church to stay in Staravos, no matter the expense. We cannot allow the dark to get a foothold anywhere else. My presence, if what you're saying is true...
He shrugged.
What side is the Inquisition on? The king or the nobles?
Alvedra shook her head, looking as confused as Gallio felt.
The militant church is on the side of the light. We don't take political stances. It's on the tenets.
Well, said Hatter, rubbing his neck and looking contrite. Perhaps what's true for the whole doesn't necessarily apply to the individual. Even if our organization stays away from court intrigue, our men and women come from children of both noble and humble births. That complicates things. King Varen is beloved by the common folk. Most of the noble inquisitors still, although they'd never admit it, cling to notions of their blood making them better than their brothers and sisters. In other words...
Everyone's taking sides, Gallio said.
What was more jarring was that this had been going on for a long time, and yet he'd never heard of it. Thinking back, the distance he'd felt from his fellow inquisitors, even those who were in the same rank as him, gained a new meaning. He'd thought they avoided him because he was the black sheep. But maybe they wished to keep him out of the loop on purpose. Examiner Hatter nodded sadly.
The examiners are doing their best to prevent the Inquisition from infighting, Gallio. Despite the way they've treated you, I believe Harmon and Barthony have the best intentions. See, you are a powder keg, a fallen Inquisitor who found his faith again, then returned to the flock with Alita's blessing. There's power in symbolism, Gallio, and the symbolism about your tale can be quite powerful if used by the wrong hands. Both sides would love to get you on their side. Those that want to leave would claim that your powers mean that Alita trusts the Staravosi to protect themselves, maybe by creating a local branch of the Inquisition. Those that want to stay would say that your power means the Light considers it our duty to protect the country. And now, with Lord Wraith's presence in Undercity, the situation is even more volatile. Both sides are at each other's throats. Examiner Harmon and Barthony needed to deal with the problem quickly and succinctly, no matter the cost, before someone does something they'll regret. Remember, if we fight among ourselves, we're easy prey for the dark. And even I fear what could happen if you're added into this mess.
You beat him and threw him in prison because you don't want him to go out there and fight for the light?
Alvedra said, raising her eyebrows, her tone a mix of disbelief and righteous anger.
All because the king needs more money?
Gallio eyed her with worry. She hadn't realized some of the implications of Hatter's tale. Haligis had invaded Staravos more out of monetary concerns than of good intentions. She was the first Staravosi Inquisitor. No matter her feelings on the matter, once she'd had time to sort them out, she was as involved in this internal conflict as Gallio was, whether or not they both wanted it. After all, Hatter had told them both his story. Gallio doubted that had been by accident.
My apologies, Hatter said, sounding like he meant it. It's hard to realize that our leaders are as human as we are. We mostly spend our time running damage control, just as confused about what's truly going on as everyone else.
Why are you telling us this? Gallio asked.
He narrowed his eyes.
What side are you on, Examiner?
The man sighed.
I'm an orphan, born and raised in the militant church. All my life. It's all I know.
He straightened his back and his stance gained an air of strength and intensity. And for a second there, Gallio could see the reason why Hatter was an examiner. He was more than he looked.
I told you my reasons so you could understand. So you'd remain here out of your own free will because it's the right thing to do. Also, so you make up your mind. If you wish to take a side, I'll consider it Alita's will. But, he and Gallio locked gazes. While the fight is going on, I'll be creating a summoning circle to Galtia. I'd like you to come with me once this is over. Something is wrong with the Inquisition, Gallio. The sun wave is the warning sign. This inner conflict is distracting the other two examiners, but it's our duty to examine our wrongs and right them. There's even a risk that this mess is by design. By whom, or even how, I cannot tell. But together, we could get to the bottom of it.
So, there it was. At least things made some kind of sense, even if Hatter's explanation had created more questions than answers. Gallio looked outside, through the small barred window of the prison. Towers of smoke rose from the ports, marring the view of the crystal blue sea. The sky above was turning crimson, and the twin moons were but two slices of light, orange and green, like the smiles of twin gods observing the slaughter and accepting it as sacrifice. He could only hope that not too many innocents were caught in the crossfire, that, somehow, Enric was skilled enough to get the heroes to target only the criminals. But that was vain hope, coming from his knowing that he was as guilty as any other Inquisitor. In their pride, both Edward Wright and himself, thinking they could outsmart the light, had only made things worse. But, if the gods were fair, why punish people that had done nothing wrong? Why not punish him instead?
Unless it's not the gods who are doing it, Gallio thought.
For the first time, he considered that him having the only sunwave of modern times could have some kind of meaning other than it being some sort of mistake.
I'll do it, he said.
Very well, said Hatter placidly.
He eased his way back to the door.
I'll prepare the circle at once. Whenever we're ready, I'll send my men to free you. I'm sure Harmon will be too busy to find out about our escapade until it's too late. And then I'll convince him it was the best move.
He faced Alvedra and told her,
You're welcome to come with us, Inquisitor. This concerns you as well.
Alvedra's expression was unreadable. Gallio had known her for many years, and still he couldn't fathom what was going on in the ranger's mind.
I'll stay, for now,
she said.
Inquisitor Oak is waiting for me. Regardless of the reasons of the examiners, there's still a dungeon lord running rampant across a Sterevosi city, and it's my sworn duty to purge the dark.
She clenched her hand into a fist.
I won't allow what happened in Barova to happen again.
There was determination in the way she stood then, one hand on her sword hilt and gaze distant and determined.
You're not ready,
Gallio thought. But he also knew there was nothing he could say to dissuade her. This was her path, her very own personal quest.
Good luck, Inquisitor,
he told her.
May the light guide your path.
Master and apprentice faced one another, both fearing it may be the last time they saw the other.
And yours as well,
Alvedra whispered. And then, Gallio was alone again with his thoughts, while Undercity burned behind him. The house had many rooms and many floors, and it was big and quiet in the way only a nearly empty house could be. A lone young man sat in front of his high-end desktop PC, wading through clickbait YouTube videos and meaningless social media drivel. It was a Friday night. But he was only deluding himself, and he knew it. His gaze wandered across his room, at the consoles he'd stacked on shelves along with pretty much every game rated higher than an 8 in the last few decades. His own Steam library wouldn't even fit in the room. He'd need a lifetime to play all that content. And yet he was bored. There were many types of gamers. Most played for fun. Others, like Ryan, didn't even like gaming all that much. It was only that, in the end, they'd rather be anyone else but themselves. If Ryan had too much peace and quiet, he'd have to listen to the things his brain had to say about him. And nobody wants that, he thought, as he looked for another video. When his phone buzzed with a message, he reached for it almost instantly, dreading that it'd be a notification for a spam email. In an ideal world, that cute doctor he'd met while traveling with his so-called friends would finally be returning his messages. But he'd learned not to get his hopes up. Girls were usually too stupid to realize what a great catch he was. This time was no different. It was an Ivalice Online notification sent in big, bold letters announcing a world event. Undercity's Corruption. World Event. The city of Constantina in the distant kingdom of Starevos has been infiltrated by a terrible cult led by a powerful boss. The only way to save good abiding citizens is to delve straight into the corrupted parts of the city and fight in an epic battle against the hordes of cultists and minions of Lord Wraith before it's too late. Don't miss this thrilling urban warfare experience. Come join the resistance against the evil Lord Wraith. Difficulty level? High. Rewards? Very high. Ryan sighed and deleted the notification. A world event was a special type of quest where most players in a game could participate. In fact, it was usually too demanding for a single party, or even a big clan, to clear on their own. World events moved the storyline forward in most online RPGs, and no player worth their salt would ever miss one for their favorite game. And the loot usually involved unique items that weren't available elsewhere. Still, he'd have to deal with Lisa, Mark, and that other guy, whatever his name was, for several hours, and he wasn't sure he was up for it. Not only were they mediocre players who barely listened to him, Lisa was growing more and more nasty with him with every passing week. Sometimes he wondered why the hell she didn't quit at the store, but she was obviously not good enough to get any other job. He certainly wouldn't fire her and have to pay her unemployment wage, but the fact that plain Lisa dared act like she was somehow better than him was getting on his nerves. If only he could figure out a way to force her to do more cleaning overtime, she'd leave on her own. It was for her own good, of course. He only wanted what was best for people. That was why it was so unfair he had to spend the night alone in his room with only himself for company. Lisa and that Edward asshole had been tight once. Ryan wasn't an idiot. He knew that his gaming friends spent more time talking on private channels among each other than with him. Who knew what Eddie had told Lisa before he'd gone insane and run away from the police? Hell, perhaps she was helping him hide. For a minute, he ran wild with the idea of following her to her apartment, where Eddie would be hiding in fear, smelly and living like a hobo, wallowing in his own filth. Ryan would burst in like a shining paladin and extract his revenge on the man while the bitch bawled in a corner. Ryan closed the tab of the children falling over compilation and looked at the ceiling. It was a cold night, which made his nose itch uncomfortably in a way he couldn't ever scratch. It had been like that since that sociopath had smashed his face against his own desk. "I'd give anything for a chance to teach him a lesson," Ryan thought bitterly. The world was shit, and the gods could blow him. He opened the Ivalice Online launcher. Mark and Lisa were already online. Like he'd said, no gamer would miss a world event of their favorite game if they could help it. Ryan smiled bitterly to himself. They hadn't even bothered to call him. Well, he certainly wasn't about to let them have all the fun. He logged in with his highest level character, Rylan Silverblade the First.
Chapter 25. Justified Use of Violence. The war room was so cramped that the drones had to take the table outside to make enough space for everyone. Ed stood with his back against the wall, wearing his recently enchanted armor over a padded black gambeson. The faint glow of his armor's runes, hidden beneath the folds of the armor, gave an eerie appearance to his body. Over his head, the leg of Queen Amphoris was like a scythe about to fall on the unsuspecting public. He felt cold, despite the heated walls, in a way that his cloak could do nothing to change. He took a quick tally of everyone in the room, flicking between normal and dungeon vision without even thinking about it. Kaga and his Kuftar could barely keep themselves from jumping around. The news of their friend's capture had rattled them to the core. Kleck was chatting with Druzb and a rider named Vogkord, trying to keep them calm without much success. Zachary and Andrina were arguing by a corner, with Brett pretending that his knees weren't shaking. Hjorce and his wife Ivona exchanged gloomy glances and kept to themselves. Yarlin was sleeping in her coffin, and would be until sundown. Five horned spiders, one for each of Laurel Empire's clusters, hung from silvery threads on the ceiling. Alder and Levy were to one side of Ed, and Kes on the other.
Did we cause this? He was thinking. Is this blood on our hands?
It has to be some kind of mistake, Zachary was telling Andrina. The Militant Church are the good guys. They don't go around killing innocents. They save them from the dark.
They also decide who is innocent and who isn't,
Andrina told the priest.
And right now, we're public enemy number one, remember?
Still, we must talk to them, explain our point of view. Oinus agrees with us. We cannot be all that bad.
Zachary passed his hands over his shiny bald head, his jaw trembling beneath his beard.
A mistake! That's all it is! Someone misinformed Lord Wraith about the gravity of the situation. The Militant Church will jail the Kuftar, perhaps chase after the Thieves Guild, have the King's officers close a couple taverns. That's all!
Oh, you poor old fool,
Andrina said, placing a placating hand on the man's arm.
We both know that's not true.
Ed had never seen Zachary look so dejected.
We're supposed to be the good guys, he mumbled. I only wanted to help.
He hid his face behind his tunic sleeve. The rest of the chatter followed along those lines, although Zachary was the only one willing to give the Inquisition the benefit of the doubt. Ed let them go on for a couple minutes, even though he knew they were there to hear him speak. He did it because he was thinking frantically, setting aside everything that wasn't helpful to deal with the problem. He thought of Undercity's situation as the problem, because it was the only way to keep calm enough to be rational. He ignored his feelings of guilt and the fear that he could be about to lose everyone he cared for. There were only three questions that mattered.
What do I have? What do I need? And lastly, how can I use what I have to get what I need?
Only that was worth thinking about. He could deal with his emotions later when there weren't any lives at stake. He had the monster hunters, a few surviving monsters from the test dungeon, the Hell Chickens, Levy's research, Laurel's Spider Empire, although it was still low in numbers because of the infighting. He had the Spider Riders, Diviner Folk, and Yarlin, and his friends. He had the Haunt, so strong and yet so fragile, every life a precious resource he couldn't afford to lose. And he had himself, willing to do anything to stop the problem from happening. Someone tugged on his sleeve, bringing him out of his reverie. It was Levy, concern glinting in her purple eyes.
Ed,
she began in a whisper.
You realize this is not only your fault, right? You need not fight alone.
Ed blinked. Since when could she read his thoughts?
I've seen that look before,
she explained, still whispering.
When you fought Nikolai. This time is different. You know that, don't you? If we are to win this fight, you must be something more than an angry dungeon lord, and we must become something more than minions.
Levy, I'm afraid I don't understand.
At that moment, Governor Brett spoke up.
Your Eldritchness! Are the rumors true, then? Has the Inquisition declared war on the Haunt?
Ed realized that the other conversations had died off, and that all eyes were on him. Despite his own confusion, it was his duty as their leader to explain the situation to them. He threw Levy one last confused glance, and then stepped forward. The others were assembled in a wedge in front of him, like a general rallying his officers before a civil war.
A few days ago, we lost contact with our Haganashi agents in Undercity, Ed announced. We've reasons to believe the militant church were the ones behind it. Our friends in the Thieves Guild confirmed it.
He fought off the urge to pace around the room, fully aware of the need to present himself as calm and collected.
Through the Spiderling grapevine, we've confirmed sightings of heavy inquisitorial activity inside and outside the city, as well as all nearby heroic teams heading toward the city. The Thieves Guild is in contact with us through message, and they just confirmed that all the city gates have been closed off. We know what that means.
He didn't need to add the rest.
It's Barova all over again.
Back then, Ranger Ione had decided to purge the village. Today, the Inquisition would do the cleansing, and tens of thousands of people would pay with their lives. Chatter spread through his minions. He heard exclamations of fear and anger and disbelief.
They'll never stop,
someone said.
They'll never stop hunting us.
I have family in the city.
You were supposed to stop this.
Hogbus, have mercy.
Kleck was so small compared to the others that people barely realized he was making his way through the crowd. Still, he kept at it, pushing and shoving until the others caught on and let him through.
So,
the adventurer's bane said once he was at the front,
what's the plan, Lord Ed?
He didn't appear the least bit afraid, except for a slight tremor in his knees that only Ed noticed.
How do we win?
We cannot survive against the heroes,
Brett snarled, his lip trembling. Kleck turned to the governor with such fierceness that the man, who was several times his size, stepped back in surprise.
If you think that, then sit back and watch me. I'll be the first.
Ed and the Batblin looked at one another. Faintly, Ed nodded.
Thank you, Kleck.
He's right, he said aloud. Undercity's fate concerns all of us. One way or the other, we put them in this situation. And I don't know about you, but I won't be able to sleep ever again if I let this happen without doing a thing to stop it. That's not the Haunt's way. It's not my way.
The chatter died down to a vague buzzing, and then faded to tense silence. Ed held the gaze of everyone in the room. Finally, it was Hyorche who spoke first.
Fine. Other than letting Kleck loose in Mulesius Heights and having him soul the entire Inquisition, what do you need me to do?
He asked. Ed grinned.
I'm going to need that enchanted sword, Forgemaster, and make sure all my warriors have the best armor and weapons available to us. Favor speed over everything else, though.
He shifted his gaze across the room.
Here's the plan. We will head to Undercity, and we're going to build a dungeon inside Nikolai's catacombs. After, we'll evacuate the slums. Then, we're going to build one hell of a special tower, and we're going to send every damn hero back to their masters. And once that's done...
His evil eye blazed with intense green fury, bathing the stone in terrible firelight.
Then we shall make it so those monsters that call themselves the good guys won't get to hurt us ever again.
Chapter 26. Western Gate. Mature hell chickens weren't in heat as often as the younger ones. This was crucial, and the very reason Alder and Levy watched nervously in the middle of the forest, about half a mile away from the Haunt, as Ed's drones finished the preparations for their part in Undercity's defense. Bloodfiend and Scar, their hell chicken mounts, eyed the pair as best as their eye slits allowed. Levy had dabbed a bit of an old handkerchief in Kaga's... concoction. She refused to think further about it. Then pocketed it. It had worked like a charm, reducing the mount's aggression from, every breath you take fills me with hatred, to, I'll kill you later when I've got some free time.
Are you sure about this?
Alder asked, eyeing the waiting drones nervously. The drones waited for their command, standing above a pile of rocks about Levy's height. One of them smiled mischievously at Levy, as if it knew what she'd have to do soon enough.
Of course I am not,
she muttered.
I'd rather be anywhere else, Alder, including back in Hein's dungeon.
She flexed her fingers to prepare them for spellcasting if the need arose.
But our friends, our co-workers, are counting on us, and if we fail, people may die. That would be terrible for my reputation. We cannot allow it.
Alder grimaced.
At least if we stumble and they catch up with us, no one will be left to tell the story of how we died. That'd be one tale I'd rather not pass into posterity.
Great asshole. Thanks for reminding me,
Lavey said, shuddering. Behind them, she was almost sure she could see piles of smoke coming from Undercity. At this distance, that could only mean the entire city was at risk. Ed was there, as well as Kes and Kleck and everyone else. When night came, even that bitch Yarlin would head over and do her best. Lavey was terrified out of her wits. But the haunt lacked the disposable numbers to oppose the heroes. With one exception. And someone had to bring it to them before it was too late.
Let's get it over with,
she said quietly. Pale-faced, Alder summoned five illusions of himself and doused them with two entire vials of Kaga's concoction. Lavey pinched her nose. The smell was despicable. Next to her, Scar craned its neck in confusion at the illusions. Before she could change her mind, Lavey mounted up onto Scar, and Alder did the same with Bloodfiend. Both hell chickens exchanged confused glances as their tiny prehistoric brains tried and failed to process the terrible series of events that were about to happen. At Lavey's signal, the drones collapsed the pile of stones, creating a tunnel that ramped up from below. The wind blew the concoction's aroma into the tunnel, which connected with one of the haunt's hell chicken breeding grounds. Almost at once, the ground trembled. Scar craned its neck as far as it could and glanced at Lavey with one wide-open red eye. She bent forward and pulled the reins in Undercity's direction as Alder's illusions began to move.
Run!
She urged it.
By all the gods, run!
She didn't need to tell it twice.
Nimble feet!
Alder exclaimed somewhere behind her as the two hell chickens jumped over root and fallen tree trunk in a desperate dash toward the city, with a veritable stampede of horny hell chickens following close behind, crushing everything under their feet.
Nimble fucking feet!
The Western Inquisitorial team was one of the many squads deployed over the last few hours. Their mission was simple. Nothing goes in and no one goes out until the heroes are done with Undercity. WIT consisted of a dozen Inquisitors and 20 militant soldiers. It was led by Inquisitor Dismas, a veteran who had held the rank of captain during the Starovosi War. He was a rugged man in his early 30s, trained for battle from a very young age. Dismas and the men under his command had been all hand-selected by Examiner Harmon himself, because WIT held a crucial position in the Inquisition's strategy. Dungeon Lord Wraith's area of influence, after all, was known to involve Hoya Forest and the neighboring regions. If Lord Wraith was to make an appearance, he'd need to pass through WIT first. Not that Dismas was very worried about the possibility. He had encountered his fair share of Dungeon Lords and knew them to be a practical bunch. Wraith wouldn't risk his forces against the sheer heroic manpower gathering outside and inside the city, with more and more heroic parties being summoned by the second. Despite Wraith's growing power in the region, only a few dungeon lords of old would have been able to go toe-to-toe with the volume of heroes that would be roaming the city in a couple hours. This was the Inquisition's trump card, and the reason they held captured cities with only a couple hundred specialist warriors and not thousands of soldiers. Still, Dismas looked up at the columns of smoke rising to the bleeding red sky and at the tiny white sparks that danced through them in the distance, magic hawks scouting the skies, ready to pinpoint the location of any enemy inside or outside the city. Even farther up, he thought he could see the silhouettes of the Griffin Riders as they glided through the clouds, but it could have been a trick of the eye. The air was tepid, and everyone was soaked in their own sweat under their armor. Most Inquisitors wore red leather under their plate, and leather was terrible for heat. Worst of all, there was no breeze to ease the temperature.
I don't like this,
Inquisitor Tyus said somewhere behind him. Dismas regarded him with a cold expression.
Would you doubt the piousness of our duty, Inquisitor?
It was one thing to complain about the heat, but another entirely to break.